Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bedosky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
And we are continuing our deep dive into dialogue. So we have covered a lot. Previously, we have talked about tags and action beats a little bit, but I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into action beats today. Before, what we covered was kind of, you know, tags as you either using a descriptive tag versus a short tag and talking about how people are talking. And then we talked about subtext and talking about, you know, all the things that people are doing kind of in the background and how you can convey deeper meaning to a conversation through that. But there's another point where I want to kind of dissect this even deeper. So again, this is not direct dialogue, but kind of the stuff that goes around it. And so what we're looking at here is a breakdown of the body language and the tonal side of it, and specifically how we can change whether we're talking about the physical actions occurring versus the emotional intent of those actions, and how each can kind of be leveraged to optimize a scene and what's going on there and the tension therein. So let's get into the examples, because that's really heavy theory right there. So the first example, Amy spoke with an overly loud tone. Yes, that suit looks great. She met my gaze and rolled her eyes. Okay. So in this example, the body language, right? What her tone and her body language, I have written out exactly as it happens. So you can see visually what has occurred, but the emotional intent behind it is left for the audience to kind of decipher, right? Why is she using the overly loud tone? And what does the roll of the eyes mean? We have to kind of piece that together ourselves as the audience. But if we shift that into, instead of saying specifically the physical actions she takes, I can write the emotional intent to clarify that for the audience. So Amy spoke with a sarcastic tone. Yes, that suit looks great. She made a face along with it that made it clear she did not care at all. Hmm. Right. And so in the second one, there is no vagueness in her emotional tint of those action beats, but I haven't written out how they actually would occur in the real world if you're to watch them. Now, each of these two styles kind of has its own merit. In the first example, right, I talked about the audience kind of figures it out on their own. And in making the audience figure these things, that emotional intent on their own, we can build in mystery and we can build in tension. And so the higher the stakes are and the less two characters are familiar with reading each other, the more tension you can kind of pull out of a direct reading as opposed to an emotional intent writing. So let's talk about if there were two spies having a meeting, right? Like Cold War era, you know, they haven't met in person. And so they've got to read the signals and the codes and, you know, to make sure they're meeting with the right person and giving their, you know, messages to the right person. And there hasn't been a switch or a double agent occurring here. So if we write that scene with the physical action beats as opposed to the emotional intent action beats, then it creates more tension in the scene. And we're going to go into that example in a minute here. Because...
Can I...
Yeah, go ahead.
So Amy spoke with an overly loud tone. That's showing. And Amy spoke with our sarcastic tone. That's telling.
Right.
And in my mind, I'm just like... So I read these examples that you had here, and immediately I was like, oh, you got to do the first one. And when I see the second, where I'm just telling in my own writing, I almost always try to change that. However, after I send it to beta readers and they say, hey, I'm a little lost here.
Right.
Then I'll go and put back in some of that, like really just on the nose, like
emotional intent.
You need to catch this. So here's an extra line that clarifies or something. Yeah. Anyway, that's just like kind of my take on those two that you have there.
And I think like that's the broad stroke. If we're just going to follow the rules of writing and be like, show, don't tell. But, you know, I think for me, the narrative has to come first. And for right now, we're going to explore an example where the show is stronger because we're building that mystery and we're building that tension. But we definitely do want to also talk about an example where the emotional intent is going to be more important. Let's go into our first example here. So these are our two spies. They're meeting for the first time and they've got to kind of figure each other out, right? Eli saw the woman in the exact dress in the exact spot he was told to meet his contact. He approached and said the code phrase. Should have brought an umbrella. I heard it might rain. The woman's shoulders twitched. She licked her lips and took a sharp breath, then spoke in a slow, monotone voice. I never carry an umbrella. Right. So here we see the action beats. But like the main character of The Spy here, we have to figure out what her body language means. And it adds tension to the scene. Is she lying? Is she a different person than should be here? Why is her body language like this, right? Why is her tone that way? And so we're going to shift this now to a little bit more emotional, direct writing, right? The woman...
Let me jump in again.
Okay.
So I feel like the cool thing about this is you're telling the reader, I trust you. I trust your intellect to figure out from these clues what's going on in this situation. And I feel like the showing is a way to respect the reader almost in a way and just be like, I trust you. You got this. I don't know. Maybe that's kind of weird, but
I mean,
an argument I have in my mind for this here.
So I think the other way you could do it is, so depending on your scene, if we look at this scene specifically, as I write this out, her shoulders twitch, she licked her lips, and she took a sharp breath. I have avoided using any specific tell of line that people are trained on, looking up and to the left, rapid blinking, sweating. I haven't included any of those to make it unclear. I have included several pieces of body language, but I've intentionally chosen ones that it's going to be a little unclear as to why she's reacting this way. In so doing, I have created, or at least attempted to create, mystery and tension. The reader doesn't know, but they do have reason to worry. Right?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I love that.
So like I said, and that is easier to do with a straight physical presentation rather than a emotionally direct one. So then we'll go into our example here. The woman jerked like she'd been scared. She took a nervous breath and hesitantly licked her lips, then spoke in a low, tense, deliberate tone. I never carry an umbrella. So here, what I have told the reader is she's nervous. Again, I'm not clarifying whether she's lying, but I have made the interpretation that she is lying less likely for the reader because, you know, that's not the direction I have pushed those emotional intentions. Right. And I could take it another step further and be even more direct in my emotional descriptions to make sure, you know, she's not lying. Now, doing that might deflate the scene. Right. But let's take this scene and flip it. OK, now let's say that I am in the perspective of the antagonist. Eli is the villain and this is his POV chapter. And if we take her side and we make it very clear she's nervous, not lying, then we know, you know, that this is her first job and she's just worried and she's not trying to deceive him. Well, that changes the dynamic of everything, because if she's the real person who's supposed to be there, he's about to take advantage of her and do terrible things. And so having her nervous, not lying, adds tension instead of, you know, removing it. Because the basic narrative drive is shifted. He is a bad person and will take advantage of this nervous, naive woman, as opposed to he is a bad person about to be deceived himself, right?
Man, that's so good. That's a great argument.
So it kind of depends on how you want that tension to roll. If I am very direct that she is nervous and naive in my action beats and he is the villain, that adds tension. If he is the good guy worried about being deceived, then being that direct removes the tension. And so I actually want to shift back to the regular body language. And so essentially what you're looking at is where is the tension of the story going to pivot based on these action beats, if I'm clear or if I am, you know, just describing the physical features. And even in describing those, you know, like I said, I have specifically picked, you know, these emotional signs that could mean she's lying, but could mean other things, as opposed to picking the ones that specifically would indicate she's lying or she's not. That's one of the things you kind of want to look at in a good action beat is how can I pivot this for optimal tension in my scene? I guess no comments.
Oh, no. I just think you nailed it. I think it makes a ton of sense to keep it mysterious in one case and to be more deliberate and clear in the other case. And both are justified in their specific context.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I think that that's really what it comes down to with a lot of writing is, you know, the rules we have are really broad stroke, but, you know, and that will produce a lot of good writing, but great writing requires you to understand why that rule is there and understand when it should not be followed. And I think we've illustrated that in our examples here that, you know, flipping the narrative drive of the scene can shift what brings the most tension into that scene.
Yeah.
So one more note here, just about body language and different ways in which you can express maybe the same piece of body language. So we could say something like daggered eyes versus focused eyes versus tensed eyes, you know, and each of them kind of conveys a different meaning, you know, focused and tensed. If you really think about how physically that's done, that's the same thing. But we can read different emotion into those three descriptions, even though we're describing the exact same thing, just by kind of shifting our language a little bit. You know, the daggered eyes, you know, they carry kind of that malevolent intent or anger, as opposed to the other two, which require just a little bit more reading in of the body language. So just another point out there of just how you can use that language to really control those action beats. The next thing we want to talk about is multi-layered dialogue. And what this means is that, so there are three major points that dialogue are going to address. I'm going to write here real quick. So the three things that dialogue kind of drives is either narrative, you know, we're pushing the plot forward with what the dialogue is saying, character, which is we're shaping the character in the things they say. And then, of course, subtext, right? We're adding another layer of meaning driven by, you know, either hidden goals or, you know, secrets or whatever into that. Any line of dialogue can easily accomplish one of these three goals. But if we can look at that line of dialogue and break it down and add more pieces to it, it accomplishes more with usually only adding a word or two. So instead of needing a line for character, a line of dialogue for character, a line of dialogue to drive the narrative forward and another line to add in subtext, maybe we can add two or three words or shift words or use different words to make one line of dialogue accomplish two or all three of these things. And that makes the dialogue more interesting. And as always, one of the things we always talk about, saving words, right? Because that's your pacer, right? Pacing is determined by how many words it takes you from one plot point to the next. Let's explore this. All right. So in this first example here, this is from The Lord of the Rings, where Bilbo is giving kind of his farewell speech. And he says, okay. Yeah.
I don't know half of you half as well as I should like, and I like less than half of you half as well as you deserve.
There's a lot going on in this piece of dialogue, which makes it dense. And, you know, you don't want all your dialogue to be this dense. This is very dense, tricky piece of thing. But the first thing is the tricky nature of that dialogue itself tells us about Bilbo. He likes little riddles and puzzles. It's just how he is. And that's why he says his little riddle puzzle here today.
Yeah.
Now,
And he writes The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, I think. So he's the author in the story, and he's a poet. He writes poems. He recites poetry. And all of this is just plugged right into that line that's who he is as a character.
But it's also a very clear statement about how he feels about his peers, right? He is arrogant. He believes he is more cultured, more intelligent, and just better than them, right? And so we get the subtext of how he feels about these people in combination with the character line, right? And so this line of dialogue is doing two things at once. It's not really driving the narrative, but it is character and it is subtext, all rolled into one you know, very interesting piece. And when you hear it, it's hard to memorize, but also hard to forget because, you know, it's a very, it kind of sticks in your mind a little bit. Yeah. It's a good piece of dialogue, hard to memorize because it is a tricky little line that he's crafted here. Yeah. But, you know, like I said, it serves multiple purposes.
Well, and I just want to point out a little more of like the cultural subtext. So he's saying, I like you half as well as I should like. So that there's like an obligation or a desire there that he's feeling. And then I like less than have you half as well as you deserve. So he's like talking about their culture and he's saying, you guys deserve to be liked, but I don't like you. Yeah. And he's like, anyway, it's like a social commentary on their little society, which, man, for a fantasy novel and never having lived in the Hobbit village, this like pulls us into that society in such a quick way and like a concise way, like you said, where there are no words wasted here. It just like draws you right in and it's an exact fit.
Yeah. So it's a line of dialogue that is working at multiple levels and it makes it more interesting. So I had an opportunity I won't name the film because we really didn't like it, but like about halfway through the movie, I turned to my friend and I said, every line of dialogue in here is so predictable. I said, here, let me list off 10 things they're probably going to say, right? Whoa, we're running out of time. You have to do this. Only you can do this. We just started listing. And all of the, and I would say about 2/3 of everything we listed off, they said in that movie. And the reason it was so predictable is because these were common lines of narrative driving dialogue. And that was all, right? Hmm. Right. We are running out of time. You have to do this. There is no turning back. You'll hear these in movies a lot. And these are lines of dialogue that drive narrative, right? They are reminding the reader about any kind of ticking clock. You know, you have to do this, either reminding the reader of specific skills owned by a character or connected to a character's arc. And of course, there is no turning back, which is, you know, a specific plot point, you know, where we talk about, you know, the point of no return, right? And it's essentially telling the audience, we are at the point of no return now, in case you missed it. Yeah, do or die, right?
I was just trying to think how we could make those more charactered.
And so,
we're running out of time. Like,
so these lines just drive narrative, but there's no character and there's no subtext. And that's why they can come off just dull and repetitive. Even in your own book, there'll be lines of dialogue that you craft that are more specific to your story. But again, if they only drive narrative, they can come across a little dull. So what we want to do is we then look at one of these lines, okay? Or, you know, and in your own novel, what you'll do is if you find a line of dialogue that only drives narrative, it does nothing else, then what you want to do is think about who is the character saying it and how can I add either subtext, right, part of their own goals there, or character, right? So let's take our character Bilbo. We are running out of time. And now let's add a little Bilbo spin on it, right? Some poetic rhyme bending that we see in his other line of dialogue. You know, and you're going to have to brainstorm this, and it's not always going to come easy, but I think the more time you spend in thinking as your character writing a line of dialogue, saying a line of dialogue, the easier this will come. So if we look at this one, there is no turning back, right? Instead of that, it says, we can't take the ring back. Go ahead and talk about yours.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, this is, I feel so uncomfortable with this.
It's tough. Yeah.
Yeah. So instead of we are running out of time, Bilbo might say something like, it's almost tea time, or we'll be late for dinner, or like, there will be something on his mind about the consequence of running out of time.
You know, and I think even if we go back to, I maybe I'm misremembering this, but in one of the movies, when we're meeting, I don't think it's Bilbo, but one of the others, Sam or something, and they're trying to do something, and he literally says, we'll be late for dinner, right? That's him saying we're running out of time for whatever they're doing, but that's what he's thinking. Sam is always thinking about food. You know, the hobbits are known for always thinking about food. And so it is a great line. It fits, you know, one of those hobbits, you know, whether it be Mary or Percy or Sam, you know, if it's not like a life and death, we're running out of kind of situation, more like they're like stealing, you know, cabbages or something from somebody's field. Like we'll be late for dinner. Sounds exactly like something they would say.
Yeah.
And okay, it communicates that idea. We're running out of time.
So I wrote another one. Instead of "you have to do this," he might say something like, "What will they say when they write our story if you don't do this?"
Yeah. What will they say? Right. I mean, that almost feels exactly like what Sam would say to Frodo, right? That feels so much like what Sam would say to Frodo in a dire moment. Be like, "What will they say when they write our story?" It slides right in. Maybe these aren't Bilbo talking, but these definitely start to fit more into the world of the Lord of the Rings. Just beautiful. Like, we can't take the ring back. Maybe Sauron knows it's here. So instead of saying that simple narrative line, we add in pieces of their world. We can't take the ring back. Sauron already knows it's here. You know, so, you know, these are ways of just looking at your dialogue, thinking about your characters, your world, their goals, all that, and just making it fit better and be more specific. And it makes it more interesting.
That's pretty cool.
And anything else, Jay?
No, that's a great episode. I'm excited to go dive into some dialogue.
All right. As always, thanks for listening. You can email us at pleasestartwriting@gmail.com if you have comments or questions or anything. I know we've kind of gone back and forth on the email, but just trying to organize things a little bit better on my side. If you enjoy the show, of course, rate and review us wherever you are, or tell your writer friends, you know, your writer group, be like, "Hey, these guys dive really deep and I enjoy it and it's helping my writing." So, you know, share it that way. And then, I'm only producing about 3 pieces of social media, for each episode I do, but those do go up on the Start Writing Facebook page. And of course, on my Twitter as well. So if you're just interested, we just kind of try and commute, some of these ideas we talk about into short little, what I call writing rules, even though, you know, we talk about, you know, breaking the rules and the nuance there, just as a way to, you know, short, quick reminders and whatnot. So if you want to check those out, like or share those, or just, you know, make your own list to remind yourself as you go through this.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to our episode. We love having you as listeners. So yeah, I just want to express some gratitude. You guys are awesome. Thank you.
That's the end of our episode, so it's time to start writing.